You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Should the state of California guarantee universal health care for all the people who live here? Assemblymember Ash Kalra thinks so.
We have a moral obligation to treat health care as a human right, not a privilege that only the wealthy can purchase or well-employed can access. Study after study has shown that the single-payer system is the only solution that can produce long-term net savings.
Kalra's bill, known as the Guaranteed Health Care for All Act, would establish just that, a single-payer system that would allow California to set prices for things like doctor's appointments, surgeries, hospital stays, and it would pay for all of those things, too. But those savings he mentioned, well, there's plenty of debate going on about that. And there's a lot of convincing to be done among fellow lawmakers in Sacramento. Joining us now to talk about all this is Assemblymember Kalra, who represents San Jose. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ned Wigglesworth is a spokesperson for Protect California Healthcare, which is a coalition that opposes the bill. Ned, welcome to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And Melody Gutierrez covers state government and politics in Sacramento for the LA Times. Melody, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Assemblymember, I want to start with you. Isn't health care guaranteed right now in California through Covered California? How would your bill, which is Assembly Bill 1400, be different?
Right now, through the ACA exchange, and California's is Covered California, there's access to health care. But let's keep in mind that the number one reason for family bankruptcies is medical bills, and that hasn't gone down since the onset of the ACA. And it's quite simply because just because you have an insurance card doesn't mean you can afford the premiums, deductibles, co-pays, and other associated costs. And so, you know, universal access is very different than universal health care.
So what would your bill do? I mean, can you explain what it would mean for me? I get my insurance through my company. I pay some money. The company pays some money. How does that change? I mean, if I need to go to a doctor or a hospital, what happens then?
So you wouldn't get your health care through your employer or based upon what kind of employment you have, if any. But you would get your health payment through the state, through CalCare. The providers would be the same. So it's not dissimilar to if someone has Medicare. They just walk up and they give their Medicare card. My father's on Medicare, so I'm very familiar with the process. As opposed to having 100 or more different payers, that makes the system incredibly complex, incredibly expensive. It's a nonsensical system to have your health care attached to your employment. Other countries look at it as bizarre. And the reality is that every credible study done has shown that single-payer health care will reduce costs, not just for the state, but for individuals and businesses as well.
It'll reduce costs, you say. It's also going to cost a lot of money, $222 billion a year, according to the UC Labor Center, that estimates that single-payer system would be really expensive. I mean, where's that money going to come from? $222 billion a year. Does the state have that money, and how do you raise it?
Well, keep in mind that majority of money flowing into our healthcare system is already state and federal funds. So you do have to make up for the delta of what's required to have a functioning system that's comprehensive. And so, you know, instead of having employers and workers and individuals paying these high premiums to make up the difference and then having those that can't afford it just be left out in the dust, or being heavily subsidized by the state to have Medi-Cal. Instead, you have a taxation, a progressive taxation scheme that ultimately is more affordable for employers. For example, the average employer right now spends 9.9% of their payroll for their employees' health care. Under what we've put forward, that would drop to 1.25%. For an individual, it would be 1% of payroll tax if you make over $50,000 a year. And then there's a graduated income tax at $150,000 and up. Now, the large chunk comes from a gross receipts tax, which I know the business community has concerns about, but as opposed to a sales tax, that would be much more easily absorbable across an entire economy rather than a regressive sales tax, which I think would be incredibly harmful for the market.
Melody, you've been in Sacramento talking with lawmakers about this, politicians. I'm guessing the word taxes isn't a very popular one, certainly doesn't excite Republicans and probably some Democrats, too. What are you hearing up there?
Yeah, certainly there are a lot of people expressing concerns, bipartisan concerns with the price tag associated with this monumental shift. So that's certainly something that would be a huge hurdle moving forward. The current proposal, there's two bills separated right now, one that has sort of the policy side of what single payer is and then how it would be financed. And that would raise, right now, that proposal raises $163 billion through these proposed new taxes. And that was something that came up at the last hearing that people had a lot of questions about how that would work and, you know, the total price tag there, whether it was worth this kind of investment.
Ned, you represent a coalition that includes health insurance companies, the California Medical Association, the California Hospital Association. They're working to stop this bill. What are the concerns of your group?
Well, our starting point is the progress that we've made on healthcare over the last 10 years. We've led the nation in expanding access to healthcare through the Affordable Care Act, and then additional steps to expand coverage recently, and most recently with the governor's budget proposal. We are at the cusp of universal healthcare coverage. We've also made significant strides with both under both the Biden administration and also under Governor Newsom and the state legislature to address the affordability concerns. And so the starting point for the members of our coalition is Californians really like the healthcare system they have. If there are improvements that need to be made, let's build on that system that's largely working rather than dismantle the entire system and replace it with something which is untested and costly, and particularly now.
What do you say to that, Assemblyman Calro, you know, that we're already on the right track to get where we need to be, that healthcare, you know, we've made progress. We have covered California. There is a marketplace there to get affordable healthcare coverage.
Well, it's just not fact. I think that there's, you know, to say that Californians are happy with their healthcare, a recent poll, a broad poll that was done showed that healthcare costs and legislate, you know, wanting the governor and legislator to do something about rising healthcare costs was the number one concern of Californians, even above rent and mortgage.
And you're not concerned about doctors leaving the state or not wanting to be a part of this plan, you know, this sort of state takeover of healthcare, because, you know, the bureaucracy scares a lot of people. Does it not scare a lot of people, the bureaucracy of a state government taking over,
It's not a state takeover of the system. It's just the payment. Because keep in mind, right now, doctors deal with more bureaucracy than they've ever dealt with ever. The corporate bureaucracy of dealing with over 100 different payers is mind-boggling. And if you talk to doctors now, they're on the phone with the insurance companies trying to get approval. And by the way, the insurance companies can override the medical professional judgment. And then what happens? And the doctor tells a patient, you know, start a GoFundMe account in the wealthiest state and the wealthiest nation on earth. And so, you know, I think that we like to demonize government. But if you talk to folks that, you know, are members of the VA, Medicare, I mean, it's much more simple and it's logical to think that you can reduce the 20% plus administrative costs, which is enormous, and reduce that down to single digits, which is what would happen if you have a single payer, because you would get rid of all the complexity that's in our system that also covers up for fraud, as well as massive profit taking.
I think we can all agree, Ned, that good quality healthcare is out of reach. So the wealthiest Americans live on average a dozen years or more longer than poorer Americans. That gap keeps growing. If doctors and hospitals are opposed to the assembly members' proposed solution, then what solutions are there? What solutions do they have to fix this affordability issue?
Mm-hmm. Well, different members of our coalition have different perspectives on what's driving the costs in California healthcare. And all have come forward with proposals, and I'm sure have worked with, reached out to the assembly member and other legislators with their particular thoughts. I think I just want to circle back to something. The assembly member is pointing out a number of concerns about the healthcare system, foremost of which is affordability, but a couple other ones as well. I guess the question still remains is, even if you agree with those problems, whether dismantling our entire healthcare system and shifting to a new state government system is the right solution. And I just want to point out a few questions that people need to ask themselves as they're grappling with that question, which again is not whether there are problems with the healthcare system. We all agree that there are. It's really whether single payer is the right solution. So here's a few questions. Do you as a Californian want to have the ability to choose private coverage? Or do you want to be forced into a state government system without any ability to opt out? And this is a state government system, which is run by the same folks that run the DMV and run EDD that had all the problems and that a lot of real folks have concerns with. So do you want the ability to choose private coverage? The second question is, are you comfortable putting California's healthcare system in the hands of Republicans in Washington, D.C.? Because AB 1400 needs the federal government to agree to redirect nearly $200 billion a year in federal funding from Medicare and Medi-Cal to the new state program to make it work. But what Democrats might agree to now, Republicans can reverse when they're back in power. So we'd be dismantling our health system in reliance on a huge funding stream that could be withdrawn in any given year in the future. And the third question is, are you okay with a state tax increase of $160 billion a year on every good and service that's provided by businesses in the state, on worker salaries as little as $50,000 a year, a tax on jobs, a tax on income? I appreciate the assemblymen's and our coalition partners appreciate the assemblyman's passion on this and its desire to address the problems in California's healthcare system. But at some point, we need to focus on whether the solution is right for California. And there are a number of unanswered questions which are critical for elected officials and for voters to ask themselves before seriously entertaining this idea.
Assemblyman, what do you say to that? What do you say to those concerns that it's a dismantling of the system?
It's just not true. I mean, it's the same thing it's the same talking point that's used over and over again. It was used when Medicare was created as well. Look, it's not a government takeover of healthcare. It's a single payer. Dozens of countries do it, and they have private providers and public providers. And so fear is the number one tool that the industry is going to use to protect their profits.
But countries are countries, Assemblyman. This is a state. This is a state in a country that depends on the federal government for things, too, which is what Ned just said. Well, so I mean, what do you say to that if, like, well, you know, different administrations, different Congresses?
Well, a couple of things. One is, look, I mean, in Canada, it's a national health program, but it's run by the provinces. They each individually run their own program. We are the fifth largest economy in the world. We are larger than most countries. And so there's no reason why we can't do it. And I would say a couple more things in response. One is the illusion of choice that we have now. You're in network, you're out of network. If your insurance company denies a treatment, even if your doctor approves it, you don't get that treatment, right? And then the third thing I'll say about the government, look, it's also very easy just to say, look, the government in Sacramento, the government in D.C. is a reason why we shouldn't do anything. And again, instilling that fear. With the Affordable Care Act, you could have said the same thing. And the Trump administration, they tried to dismantle it. They did whatever they could. But the reality is that we can't always control the politics of tomorrow. What we need to do is recognize what needs to be done today. And I think if you give something that ultimately the people benefit from, it's really hard to take it away. And they can keep throwing the number around on how much the taxes are. But what they're hiding is that we're paying way more than that already in a health tax. It's just not called a tax. It's premiums, deductibles, copays, denial of coverage, you name it. That all adds up to more, you know, than what the taxes would amount to.
So let me ask you this. You introduced a similar bill 4 years ago that failed. What has changed? What have you changed in this bill to ensure that it passes? And by the way, the prospects, they're not very good because you just have tomorrow, right?
Well, there was a bill introduced 5 years ago. It wasn't introduced by me. I was a co-author, so I signed on in support. That was by Senator Ricardo Lara, now who our insurance commissioner. There's a few things that are different. One, I think our bill is better. I think it has better cost containment. I think we learned lessons and took suggestions from past bills. Number two, when that bill happened, essentially got through the Senate and was kind of like dumped onto the Assembly, the Speaker, the same Speaker we have now, at the time said, hey, you know, are you looking into the cost, like, you know, where are you on that? And it was crickets. And so here with the same speaker, this bill is moving forward with the work, you know, cooperation of the speaker's office. They've been phenomenal in working with them over this past year. So that's a huge difference in terms of its feasibility of moving forward. And, you know, if it gets through tomorrow, getting through tomorrow is one hurdle. An equally, if not bigger hurdle, is getting it off the assembly floor within 10 days of it passing through appropriations. And so, yeah, there's no doubt that's a big hurdle. But, you know, this is something that there's a reason why this has been tried so many times before and has been unsuccessful. But just because it's been unsuccessful in the past doesn't mean I'm just going to throw up my hands and be satisfied with the status quo that is literally killing Californians.
Melody, what are the prospects of this getting through?
I think that the timeline element here is going to be the biggest obstacle. Tomorrow's vote is critical. It can't move forward if the Appropriations Committee doesn't approve it tomorrow. Even if it does make it through Appropriations, then it heads to the Assembly on a shortened timeline as well. So I think that the timeline is going to be the biggest hurdle. And given some of the concerns that even Democrats who support single payer were saying during the Health Committee hearing last week, I think that there's still a lot of concerns about some of the unanswered questions and whether or not there's enough known about this particular proposal right now. So I think that there's it's definitely worth continuing to watch, but I think that there's a lot of hurdles ahead.
And meanwhile, Governor Newsom has been pushing his own healthcare expansion, right, for those living in the country without documentation. Does he support this bill? I mean, he ran on a single payer system, right?
Right. He campaigned on single payer 4 years ago, and he's repeatedly said that he thinks single payer is the future. He's, put himself as the biggest advocate of single payer. But at the same time, he's also not specifically commenting on AB 1400, which has been around for, over a year in print. And so he said he hasn't read it yet, but it's been very much out there and open for him to be able to look at and comment on. And we have not seen that yet. Instead, he's pushing through his budget a healthcare expansion that would eliminate the final barrier for people who qualify for Medi-Cal but are denied due to their immigration status. And so that's sort of what his focus has been at the same time that this single payer proposal has been put forward.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us and sharing your perspectives on such an important, but obviously a very complex issue. Assemblymember Ash Kalra, who represents San Jose, Ned Wigglesworth, who represents Protect California Healthcare, a coalition that opposes the bill, Melody Gutierrez, who covers state government and politics in Sacramento for the LA Times. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a great day, guys.
All right, finally today on Greater LA, let's unwind a little after an intense conversation about healthcare costs and legislation and talk about art and a couple of new gallery shows from two different LA artists. Rodrigo Valenzuela has a show at Luis de Jesus, Los Angeles, a few series of photographs looking at the theme of labor, and Katarina Olschbauer's solo show at Nicodem, which reinterprets Greek mythology. Lindsay Preston Zapp is our art insider, is here to talk about these new exhibits. She's founder, of course, and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
So Valenzuela's show is called New Work for a Post-Workers World. Describe one or two of the photographs that are featured at this show.
Yeah, I love that title. Like, the play on work and workers is really interesting. But so there's a few different series of photographs in this exhibition, and they're all grayscale and made using different printing processes. One really striking series is called After Work, and these images almost look like these sort of post-apocalyptic factory scenes. There's these kind of rooms photographed from the front and sculptural forms throughout them that kind of look like machines or robots and chains. Like, there's some kind of function happening, but there's no bodies. So there's a very quiet quality to these images. And as I said, they're all photographed from front on and kind of staged compositionally. So there's a sense that they're made for the camera, like the artist has kind of proposed these spaces for us to then come and sort of ponder or look at. And the artist stages these in his studio, so all these machines are fictional, and they're made with objects that Valenzuela finds on the streets of LA or in trash cans. So he'll use a bucket or like a styrofoam package from a speaker or a 2x4, and then he kind of assembles these all to create these ominous-looking machines and creatures. But it really starts from these everyday, humble materials.
The theme, Lindsay, the theme of labor and machines and automation, as you know, you mentioned, play a role in Valenzuela's work. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, these are themes that Valenzuela uses a lot in his work. You know, thinking about labor unions, labor strikes, capitalist systems, protest movements. And part of this comes from his own experience. His father was involved in a mailman's union in Chile, where the artist is from. So a lot of this context is coming from personal history and experience. But in terms of this work, you know, the title, again, Work for a Post-Workers World, there's definitely this idea that all the workers, all the kind of human labor has disappeared, and the machines are kind of the things that remain. So, you know, I think from there you can extrapolate. I think Valenzuela really intentionally leaves his work open for us as the viewers to project onto this. You know, like, did the workers revolt? Are they on strike? Were they eradicated? Are we seeing some kind of aftermath of protest? And the way, again, that he photographs these, he leaves it really open for us to kind of come in and bring our own conclusion to the narratives that he's presenting.
Now the show at Nicodem Gallery from Katarina Olschbauer is titled Live Flesh. These are very different works of art, and certainly a lot more colorful.
Yeah, I mean, coming from Valenzuela's show, which I literally did as I was gallery hopping, coming from his show, Black and White, to Katarina's, it just feels like you're walking into an explosion of color. Her paintings are really beautiful figurative paintings that are made with bright colors and these kind of bright painted gradients. But they do have a historical feeling to them. They feel familiar. And the artist is, in fact, referencing a lot of art historical work directly. So you kind of start to point out there's compositions that are borrowed from Titian and Picasso and Manet. So it all feels like you've kind of seen it before. And she's really blending those narratives with Greek and Roman mythology and some religious themes as well, but really using those references as a jumping off point. And her paintings seem to kind of make their own dream worlds that are loosely inspired by these references.
So how does she do that? I mean, how does she take, Lindsay, art history, as it were, and make it her own? I mean, is it the colors or maybe the way the figures are painted?
I think definitely those two things are part of it. The colors, like I said, they're super bright. They feel really fresh and contemporary, and the gradients give it almost like a digital feel. But then also there's, you know, gestural strokes, and at times the figures feel cubist, which are references, I think, to previous art historical styles. So I think with her painting style and the stories that she's pulling from, she's sort of sampling bits from here and there and across this huge historical time span and creating this mashup that kind of reinvents history, mixes them all together, and comes up with something new. And the other way she's doing that is she really plays with gender representation in these works. The figures she paints all have this really androgynous look to them that really upends some of the classic ways that we think about Greek myths and the narratives and classic stories that are all kind of more rooted in traditional gender roles. And also, I'll be writing more about Katarina Olschbauer's work in Carla's upcoming February issue, so you can take a look for that.
And that exhibit, by the way, Olschbauer's exhibit, will be up at Nicodem through January 29th. Rodrigo Valenzuela up at Luis de Jesus through February 19th. Really exciting stuff. Lindsay Preston-Zappas, founder and editor-in-chief of Carla. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, will the workplace ever be like it used to be? A look at the future of the office and the business that happens inside. And we'll remember Marty Roberts of Marty and Elaine fame, that Dresden won't be the same. That's yours on this show tomorrow. Share your thoughts with us. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us how we're doing at kcrw.com/GLA. Even mention to us what you'd like to hear. And subscribe to the podcast, too. all at kcrw.com/greaterLA, or get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all help piece the show together this evening. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your time and attention. Have a great night.